Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP, which is an accredited estate planner. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I've just completely lost my thought, forgot what I was doing. Anyway, welcome to the show, folks. It is December 23rd, 2020. I think I'm confused because I wasn't going to be here this week, but last week we had the snowstorm, so we came in this week. So I thank Lori C. for coming in and Shandi, of course, for being here with me on December 23rd. The markets were mixed today with the Dow closing up a little bit, 30,129. The NASDAQ was slightly down at 12,771, and the S&P was up slightly at 3,690. I hope that this isn't an indication of how the rest of the show is going to go. We've gotten a little bit of a rough start here. Tonight, we will cover some odds and ends to know for Social Security and Medicare. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live, you can give your questions to Lori and she will write it down and bring it into the studio. If you have questions that are more involved or you don't want to share on air, you can certainly email us as well through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. So tonight, Social Security and Medicare, and I say odds and ends because I think it's worthwhile just throwing out a few little tips here and there or bits of information. So I called it odds and ends. What are some topics that come up frequently relating to these two subjects? Clients are often asking, when should I collect? Do I have to go on Medicare? Which plan should I select? How do I avoid the increased premium? So those are some questions on Medicare. But of course, the most often for Social Security is, you know, when should I collect? And then when we have couples, there's different claiming strategies that should be evaluated. So lots of questions around Social Security and Medicare. So that's why I thought we would just touch on some of those tonight. Starting off with, you know, when are we eligible for Social Security? So people who are listening tonight, for the most part, you might be, you know, retired, you could still be working, you've worked for many years, and we just take these things for granted. But you may have children or grandchildren who may not be in the workforce yet. And this is something that I think we probably should bring up with our kids a little bit more often than we do. I know I wasn't, I've worked my entire life. I think I started working when I was 12 years old and my siblings as well. And we just always worked. And my husband and I, raising our kids, said, you know, it'd be nice if they didn't have to work like we did. And I really hadn't thought through what that might mean as far as earning credits for Social Security benefits and why it might be really important and another reason to get our kids out there working early. So let's talk about what credits mean, and then I'll move in to talking about things like online access, Social Security benefits, spousal benefits, survivor benefits, divorce, things like that, and a little bit about Medicare. And before I start, I already have a question from Jean in Forks Township. Jean said, are annuities taxable when you transfer them from one company to another in Pennsylvania? Great question, Jean. Thank you. And thank you for calling from Forks Township as well. Annuities, If you do a tax-free exchange, so it's like a transfer from one into another, it's called a 1035 exchange. It's a like-kind exchange. There's only a couple things the IRS lets us do where we exchange from one taxable asset to another one. And that's a 1035 exchange. It applies to annuities, and it can be tax-free if it's done as that. Typically, if you're working with an advisor and they suggest that you do an exchange, they should be very well aware of this. So it's not income taxable on the transfer from one annuity to another. If you take a distribution out of the annuity, then you're going to have a taxable event. You can't take it out and you put it in your bank account and buy another annuity. It's not like an IRA 60-day rollover kind of a thing. So you can do a taxable exchange having never taken possession of the money. Now, you asked from one company to another in Pennsylvania, and I think that was an interesting little extra item that you tagged on there. Annuities, when we're talking about annuities, you can have an annuity in an individual retirement account, an IRA, or you can have an annuity outside of retirement accounts as a regular investment. And that's called a non-qualified annuity. And generally, on your statement, you'll see what kind of annuity you have, if it's non-qualified or if it's in some type of IRA. Non-qualified annuities, when you invest in them, you have a basis in the contract. Any earnings and growth on that underlying investments within that annuity, and I'm talking about variable annuities, recognize some income. And when you take out a distribution, the income comes out first. Now, it didn't used to be that way, way, way back in the day, and many, decades ago. So I'm not referring to that. I'm referring to more recent annuities. When you take a distribution, the earnings come out first, and Pennsylvania taxes those too. So it's income taxable for federal purposes, and it's income taxable for Pennsylvania, and it's treated as interest income and shows up on the interest schedule for Pennsylvania. So I think it's interesting that you noted that. But again, if it's a trustee, like a transfer, a 1035 exchange, you don't have to pay any income taxes on it. If you take a distribution, yes, earnings come out first. If you annuitize it, meaning you tell the company, I want the exact same amount every single month, you elect an annuitization of it, then it's going to be pro rata based on the basis and the earnings on it when you annuitize it at that point. So, Gene, thanks so much for that question. So, again, going back to talking about Social Security and Medicare odds and ends, credits. So how do we first even become eligible for Social Security? And this is important for Social Security, not only retirement benefits, but also for Social Security disability. So and some of this information is available on the Social Security website. I love the Social Security website. They do a great job. They have lots of information there, maybe too much information for some people to go through. You have to kind of know how to navigate it. But the website is SSA.gov. That's SSA.gov, stands for Social Security Administration.gov, G-O-V for government. You know, it's a government website then. And some of this information is there as well, but I'm hoping I can kind of summarize some of this for you. And of course, it's a very complicated subject when we're talking about claiming strategies and things like that. So this is a broad educational information session tonight. So credits. First, you need to earn credits from working to be eligible for Social Security or have a spouse who did so that you can receive spousal benefits. The reason it helps to earn some level of credits for yourself, though, is to also be eligible for the disability benefits in the event you were to become permanently disabled at some point. Earning at least 40 Social Security credits will qualify you for retirement benefits, and you earn 4 credits per year. So those math geniuses in the audience listening, if you have to have 40 Social Security credits to qualify for retirement benefits, and you can earn 4 credits per year based on your total wages and self-employment income. And of course, you also have to be paying into the system, meaning you're paying Social Security taxes. That's 10 years. And you can earn these credits over a year, or you may earn enough for all four credits in less time. So in 2020, you earn one Social Security or Medicare credit for every $1,410 in covered earnings. So you must earn $5,640 to get the maximum four credits for the year. So you can either do that $1,410 per quarter, or you can do $5,640 all at once, as long as you've earned enough for the four credits, which is $5,640. We're going to talk more about that and some little nuances of that when we come back. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. Podcasts of prior shows are also available at WDIY.org under Public Affairs. Scroll down, look for Your Financial Choices, and peruse the topics from shows past. We are talking about Social Security and Medicare tonight, just some odds and ends. And we have just reviewed the credits. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with us or give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it in. And the number again is 610-758-8810. Email is also available through yourfinancialchoices.com. Remember, I mentioned about the importance of earning these credits. Earning at least 40 Social Security credits qualify you for retirement benefits. I had also alluded to earning or paying into the system also could qualify you for disability benefits. But here's one of the little odds and ends. You might not necessarily had to have earned 40 credits to qualify for disability. And that's because it might depend on when you become disabled. So one of the things I want to allude to first is why you may not end up having that much. If you have, for example, a young person who becomes disabled, they may not have been able to work 10 years to pay into the system. So that's why there's a little bit of an adjustment on the disability. But I want to caution people, because even when we think about young people, it might be, you know, high school kids, college kids, depending on where you work, you want to check your W-2 to make sure you're paying Social Security tax into the system. And here's the odds and ends that I'm referring to. Students who work at like university when they're in college and they're doing work study programs or college campus jobs, sometimes they're not paying into the Social Security system because the universities could be, for those students, exempt from having to pay Social Security, and then the student doesn't have to pay Social Security. So watch for that kind of thing. The other time where we sometimes don't see Social Security on a W-2 might be if you're self-employed and you hire your children. That's another one of those exemptions to having to pay into the system. So just because you're working and getting wages, you want to make sure you're whether or not the job you have is earning those credits for you. Now, disability does have different earnings tests and does include a recent work test and a duration work test. And again, that's because sometimes or someone might not have been working in the system 10 years before becoming disabled. So let me just kind of go over some of these numbers that I got from the Social Security website. The Earnings test and recent work test and duration test, it will vary based on your age. So before age 24, 6 credits in the 3-year period ending when disability starts would qualify you for disability. Between ages 24 and 31, you would need 3 years of work out of the past 6. Over age 31, you must have at least 20 credits in the 10-year period immediately before you become disabled. So remember, I told you it's 40 credits for retirement benefits. But for example, someone who's over age 31, they just might have to have 20 credits in the 10-year period immediately before you become disabled. So that kind of gives you a little bit of room for those people who might have been going to college, master's programs, PhD programs, or whatever. If they become disabled at 31, they might have only had 6 years of work or 5 years of work or whatever it might be. So they give you a little leeway there. There's also special provisions for credits needed for survivors. Minimum needed is 6 credits in the 3 years before death. And you may be eligible to work while receiving disability benefits as well as you transition back to work, if you're able to, without losing your benefits. So that's, to me, another little odds or ends that someone might not have been aware of, that you can qualify for disability. And we often think of Social Security disability as permanent because they will describe it as that permanent, expected to, you know, end in, you know, your death or something like that, permanent disability. But there are sometimes temporary disabilities. So Social Security works with folks. You may be able to transition back into working. They allow you to try that. I have seen that where someone may have something like epilepsy and have seizures and may not be able to work, but then they get it under control and want to try working again. And that could be one of those circumstances. Now, if you have questions on Social Security or Social Security disability, that website again was ssa.gov, and they have just great resources there. And I really like going to the source. Many people will, you know, Google or search online for these types of things, but going right to the website really kind of gives you the source information. They also have a link to benefits eligibility, a screening tool for that, and to find out which programs may be available to you. There's also an additional program, which I'm not going to really touch on tonight, called Supplemental Security Income. That's SSI. That is technically a separate system from the Social Security pot of money in the Social Security system. It is a financial need-based. So SSI is something different. It's Supplemental Security Income. I've heard folks come in to me and say, well, I'm getting SSI, and it's not SSI they're getting. They're actually getting Social Security. So sometimes I think they might have known someone who's getting SSI, but that's traditionally need-based. The other thing I would like to mention, which I think is really great, is this online access that Social Security has now. And you have to kind of go through some hoops, but you can get personalized retirement benefit estimates and spouse's benefit estimates if you're married. You can apply for retirement, you can apply for disability, you can apply for Medicare benefits, all online. You can check the status of an application or an appeal. You can request a replacement Social Security card, it says, in most areas. You can print a benefit verification letter, set up a change, set up or change direct deposit. Get your Social Security 1099 form. That's kind of nice. If you're ready to do your tax return and you're waiting for it in the mail, you could set up this online access account and just print it off. You can change your address and a few other things. And they mentioned that you can access this from anywhere and from any device. So it's, you know, mobile ready. Now, when I said it's a little complicated, you do have to be ready to answer very specific questions to set up the online access, which is called My Social Security. Obviously, they have to be very, very careful in opening this kind of portal up to you, and they really have you go through a lot of checks and balances to make sure that you can verify your identity by asking things about your credit and credit cards you've had in the past, maybe where you've lived. It's just a myriad of questions. And then I do believe they have dual factor authentication as well. So lots of safety protocols that they've instituted since they first introduced this. Again, online access, My Social Security, great way to see your benefits and do some online, online task if you need. Folks, if you have questions, we are talking about Social Security odds and ends tonight. The number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to Your Financial Choices, right here with Lori Siebert. I am your host, and you are listening to 88.1 WDIY. You can always listen online at wdiy.org, and podcasts of prior shows are also available there. We are talking about Social Security and Medicare, some odds and ends, little, you know, hopefully some tips tonight, some things to be aware of. And if you'd like to talk live on air with us, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And Lori's in the studio to take your calls. If you want to talk on air, you certainly can. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Lori and she will bring it in to me. So let me just give you some other little data points before I move on to Social Security benefits. And that is, I talked about earning the credits. How do we earn those credits, I said, if you're paying into the system. And this is because I'm a nerd. I love looking at W-2s because I think there's so much information on the W-2s. But if you look at your W-2 or your pay stub, you will see those line items that say OASDI or, you know, I don't know if they still say FICA, but there's Medicare tax, there's Social Security tax, there's, you know, names for these things. But basically the rate that you're paying into the system as an employee is 7.65%. And if you are an employee, your employer is also paying in 7.65%. That's the combined rate for both Social Security and Medicare. When we break those out, and back in the day, we didn't really see the breakout, but now we do because there's an additional tax that may apply. But the 6.2 is the Social Security piece, and that 6.2 that they're collecting of the 7.65 as an employee is capped. So in 2020, if you made more than $137,700, your Social Security was capped. They stopped collecting after that. If you make under that, then you're going to see it even, Steven. 6.2% times your wages will be the Social Security that you're paying in. The Medicare piece of it that we're paying, and some people think it's for Medicare Part B they're paying for, you're actually paying towards your Medicare Part A, your hospital insurance that you will eventually have access to at age 65 or, you know, in circumstances at disability. That's the 1.45. The Medicare piece is the 1.45%. That used to also be capped, and I can't tell you how many years ago they stopped doing that, but they don't cap that anymore. So the 1.45% will apply to all of your wages. Then there is an additional 0.09% Medicare surcharge if your wages are over certain limits, $200,000 if you're single, $250,000 as a couple. You may have to pay that. And if you're making that much, your employer will withhold the extra amount. And it's subject, it's applicable to the Medicare wages. And the Medicare wages is basically your gross, less some, you know, medical expenses and things like that. It's before they take out the 401k. So you are paying the Social Security and Medicare tax on, you know, your total wages, basically, to keep it simple for our purposes tonight. Now, if you pay into the system, as we mentioned, earn those credits. If you become disabled at a young age, you have to earn X amount of credits and you could qualify for Social Security disability. If you just continue working and you've earned at least 40 credits, and then when you go to retire and you become Social Security eligible, your benefit will be based on the earnings that you had over the period of your work life. And that's how they figure out what your benefits are. Okay, so there's a lot of other numbers, but the numbers I think get bogged down if I talk about them too much. If someone has a specific question about what the disability might look like or something like that, we can go into it. But I will mention one other thing. Sometimes people retire, start collecting Social Security, and then decide to take on a part-time job. If you are collecting Social Security prior to full retirement age, there are also some earnings tests that, because the idea is if you start collecting Social Security, that's kind of like your retirement benefit. And if all of a sudden you're working before full retirement age and collecting Social Security, they're going to say to you, hey, wait, you know, make up your mind. Are you working? Are you retired? So they put some earning tests on it. So if you start collecting Social Security before full retirement age and you make more than $18,240 in 2020 or $18,960 in 2021, you have to pay back a dollar for every $2 over. So they just reduce your benefit, basically. You know, and then that extra money you're making really kind of almost goes back into your earnings record. But then you do have to start paying back. That is if you're pre-full retirement age. Once you're full retirement age, you can make however much you want. You don't have to pay it back once you're full retirement age. And in the year you turn full retirement age, there's some other thresholds. But again, it may be a little bit too complicated for us to get in tonight. So you want to be aware of that. A lot of people will do that. They will start, you know, they'll retire and then take on a part-time job. And that's kind of nice. And then they just watch how much they're making. And you can do it based on a monthly amount. It's not necessarily that annual amount I mentioned. It's kind of calculated monthly. So be careful of that. So Social Security, you've earned your credits, you've worked, you've paid into the system, and now you get to think about retiring. And the age you retire can vary. And some people think that they have to retire at Social Security full retirement age. Well, people can retire basically whenever they, you know, choose and have the financial means to do so. When you choose to take your Social Security will depend on very specific circumstances, you know, that apply to you. You know, I can have two different clients come in and give them two different options for what they should do depending on their circumstances. And we might look at their age. We might look at their cash needs. We might look at their health, their longevity, their are they married? Do they have a spouse? Who are they providing for? So there is a lot that goes into the claiming strategies for Social Security. One thing for sure, if you are already collecting Social Security, they do provide cost of living adjustments, COLA adjustments, and those COLA notices are mailed out in December. So a lot of people are probably getting their Social Security notices for next year. And we found out that you're getting a 1.3% increase in 2021. Not a huge amount, but an increase nonetheless, 1.3% increase on your 2020 benefit going into 2021. There's a few other things on that notice, which we'll talk about after this next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening, WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Shawnee Gray. It is 6:30 and 40 with clear skies. Lehigh Valley weather. Tonight, we're going to have a chance of rain after 3 a.m., low around 32. And for your Thursday, Christmas Eve, expect rain, high 58. Thursday night, we're going to have heavy rain, flood watch, low 42. And on Christmas Day, we're going to have rain and snow showers before 3 p.m., high 48. And Friday night, low 18. Saturday is going to be mostly sunny, high 29 degrees. And Saturday night, mostly clear, low 20. Now, back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, folks. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with us or give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio, and I'll do my best to answer them. Questions can also be emailed through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. So talking about Social Security, we talked about that there is an increase in benefits. Let's go back for a moment, though. Once you have an understanding of your benefits, Social Security will send out, I believe, a statement. I think every maybe 5 years now, they used to send it out every year. That was too much. Then they stopped sending it out. It seemed like completely. And then they started up again. And I think it might be every 5 years. But as I mentioned earlier, that online access, mysocialsecurity.com, if you get that set up, you can go in and check it whenever you want and, you know, play with different numbers, play with calculators, things like that. But it's important to understand how benefits work. So Social Security does look at your highest 35 years. And while you're working, if they send you that statement, the benefit that they project assumes that you're working to those ages, making similar income to the last reported amount. So if your statement, for example, shows that you'll receive a benefit of $1,800 a month at age 67, and that's your full retirement age, if you stop working at 55 and you've taken that statement and put it in your drawer, and you go to your financial planner and you say, hey, I'm going to get $1,800 at age 67, but you stopped working at 55, that's not going to be a good number. That's not going to be your benefit. Because when Social Security did those projections, they assumed you were still making that last amount of money. Now, granted, if that, you know, you have a fresh statement and you haven't worked for 5 years, then Social Security will show that you weren't working and they will adjust for that. But basically, they're using your last year of, you know, earnings on your statement. So sometimes the full retirement age benefit that they're showing on the statement, if you retire before full retirement age, will be adjusted a little bit. Now, if you're only a year or two away from that, it's not going to be a huge difference. And again, there are some cost of living adjustments as well. But be careful if you are retiring many years before your full retirement age, because it could be a factor. So you want to make sure you're adjusting for that if you're doing projections. So let's talk about some terms to know. These are some of my odds and ends. You'll hear people talk about FRA and PIA like we all know what that means. Oh yeah, what's your FRA? Oh, what's your PIA amount? Well, the FRA is your full retirement age. Seems kind of basic. So your full retirement age. Well, some people might think that's the year they retire from their job, as I mentioned, but Social Security has already defined that for your Social Security retirement benefits. They say that full retirement age depends on when you were born. So people who were born 1955 to 1960, pre-1955, I think it was age 65. Then they changed it to age 66 for people who were born between between 1955 and to 1960. If you were born in 1960 or after, full retirement age is 67. All right, so that's a little bit longer. So that's how they keep the system going a little bit longer. But really, if you think about it, it makes sense because we are all living longer. There is a life expectancy tool on the Social Security website. And I think I put my age in and I think I'm supposed to live another, I don't know what it was now, 28 years or something. Good news, I guess. But these are just, life expectancy factors based on some actuaries, probably calculations. I think it's a good idea to make sure you understand your own history, your family history, if it's possible to be able to do that. Sometimes we don't know the family history. If we were adopted or, lost a parent early and maybe don't have that information, or grandparents maybe as well. So you kind of want to know what life expectancy, would be expected for you. The reason that might be important is because Social Security bases your benefit on your earnings record and your life expectancy. So let's think about this for a minute. They take your earnings and your life expectancy and come up with a value of that. What does that mean today? What have you paid into the system? What has your employer paid into the system? And figure your benefit. And if you take your benefit early, like at age 62, you get a discount on that. You're not going to get your full retirement age benefit that they said you would get if at full retirement age of 67 and you decide to collect at age 62. They're not going to give you that full benefit. They're going to discount it. And they're going to discount it because you're going to collect it for a longer period of time based on their life expectancy. If they think you're going to live to age 88 and they say that your full retirement age is 67, they're going to say if you're collecting at 62, you're going to be collecting it for 5 years longer. They're going to reduce your benefit. But bottom line, smaller amount for a longer period of time. Or if you delay collecting from full retirement age, you could delay to age 70. If you delay, you're going to collect a larger amount for a shorter period of time. But basically, it should kind of be basically the same benefit. So that's why it's important to know your life expectancy. If you, if Social Security says you're going to live to age 85 and everyone in your family lives to age 100, it might be a good idea for you to consider delaying your benefit to get the maximum benefit because you're going to have a longer period of time. If you're someone who everyone in the family, drops off at age 65, maybe you want to collect earlier, maybe not delay, do it right away. So these are why it's important to kind of have as much information as you can when you're making these decisions. But it's personal. You really have to understand the situation and how it applies to you. I'll talk more about that in a little bit. So primary insurance amount, the PIA, the primary insurance amount is basically the amount of your monthly benefit at full retirement age. So your PIA is what you're going to get at your FRA, your primary insurance amount, which is the amount of your monthly benefit at full retirement age. So again, I mentioned if you collect early, your primary insurance amount is going to be reduced, and it's reduced per month prior to full retirement age. And it's increased each month if you wait past full retirement age. So sometimes we talk about that there's an advantage, an incentive to wait to collect past full retirement age. There is an 8% increase per year if you wait, but it's really calculated monthly. So I have some people who think, gosh, I have to wait to age 70. And well, at age, 68 and a half, if all of a sudden you have some cash flow issues, you could collect. The increased benefit is calculated monthly. So you're still going to have an advantage of increasing your benefit, even if you wait past full retirement age. And this can be really a significant difference. And it really needs to be considered when you're talking about collecting, whether early or late, your increased benefit, that extra amount, or whether or not it makes sense to collect early. So you want to look at health, longevity, cash needs, and survivor needs. Why do I mean survivor needs? Well, you might have a spouse who does have longevity, everyone in the family lives to age 96. I see these cases. And maybe you're the spouse who, decided to take a pension early and you did a single life, you retired at 55, and now it's time to file for Social Security. And you're age 62 and you're thinking, why not? Well, if you picked a pension with a single life annuity, it means it's gone when you're gone. And if you have a spouse and you didn't otherwise, provide some other kind of retirement benefit flow for them, if you delay collecting your Social Security, it could increase the benefit for a survivor, because the survivor of a couple steps into the higher benefit. Okay, so if you're single, you don't have quite as many claiming strategy options as a couple. All right, it doesn't mean you have to go run off and get married, but there are a lot more options when there is a couple. All right, let me talk about what do I have next? Odds and ends. You can use a retirement calculator on My Social Security account. So that's what I thought I would mention there. If you set up a My Social Security account, they have all the information for you, for your own Social Security benefit. So you can go on there and play with the numbers, especially if you haven't, received a statement recently. You can print the statement right there and see what your benefit is. You can see how they would calculate your full retirement benefit. Maybe you're a couple years away from collecting and you're thinking, why don't I retire today? How is that going to impact my ultimate benefit? And those calculators, I believe, will give you some of those answers. So you heard me mention possibly in a couple delaying collecting. You could delay to up to age 70. You get an 8% premium per year. That might be something you want to do to provide for a surviving spouse if it's going to be a higher benefit. When we talk about claiming strategies, again, there's some advantages when there's a couple, because perhaps one of you could collect earlier, or at age 65 or 66 or even 67, and the other could delay collecting their benefit to kind of boost the future potential for the survivor, basically. Or both of you, if you could both live a very long life and you're increasing kind of the collective flow by delaying maybe the person who has the higher benefit, because you're getting that 8% per year on a higher earner's record. Okay. So either way, if you are a couple, there is spousal benefits. And you heard me mention maybe at the beginning of the show that there could be a circumstance where you have a spouse who has not worked, but they still would be entitled to a spousal benefit. So even if you've not worked yourself and you don't have an earnings record, you are still eligible for a spousal benefit on the working spouse's record. Generally, if at full retirement age, the spouse would collect about half of the working spouse's primary insurance amount. If the working spouse collects early and the spousal benefit is elected prior to full retirement age, then there is going to be a haircut, as I mentioned earlier. If you collect early before full retirement age, there's definitely going to be a haircut. When we come back from our next break, we're going to talk about survivor benefits. And I realize I'm probably going to have to speed up what I'm sharing a little bit or cut back on some of the details so I can get some of this information out that I want to make sure we cover with Odds and Ends, some things that we don't really hear about too often or talk about. So I think it's important to make people aware of it because sometimes they aren't and they may be missing collecting some of these benefits. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Thank you to all of WDIY's generous, sustaining members. Setting up an automatic monthly gift on your credit card is the easiest way to support your listening and ensure WDIY remains a strong and thriving public resource. Become a sustaining member of WDIY today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 7 or visit wdiy.org. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. Tonight, we're talking about Social Security, and I'm hoping that we're going to get to some of the Medicare issues I want to bring up. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air or off air, whatever's more convenient, or email questions through yourfinancialchoices.com. So survivor benefits. Typically, the funeral director will notify Social Security of the death, but that doesn't mean that they will that you'll automatically be notified by Social Security for benefits. So whether or not you should apply for survivor's benefits depends on your own situation, including age, cash needs, and any benefits that may be available to you on your own record. What many survivors may not realize if they've not already started collecting is that they could have the opportunity to collect a spousal benefit and then defer their own benefit if it would result in a higher benefit for them in the future. So I have had a couple clients who do this where the deceased spouse actually probably had a little bit less of an earnings record than my survivor. And so my survivor can collect their spousal benefit, their widow's benefit on the deceased spouse's record while letting their own benefit earn deferred credits or deferred, you know, increases. Okay, so that's why if there is a death and there's some Social Security claiming options, put on the brakes, do some analysis, figure out some numbers. If you've already both started collecting, then it doesn't matter. Social Security is automatically going to put the survivor with the higher benefit. Okay? It's if one of you may not have started collecting that you want to, explore your options. Your spouse may have died before they ever started collecting. You may not be Social Security age eligible, but then 2 years later, you do become eligible. And for a survivor, the widow's benefit can be paid at age 60. That's different than what you've heard me say earlier, which was 62 is the early application age. But for a widow, it's 60. Again, if at age 60, maybe you weren't working or you had a part-time job, you're not making very much money, you could end up electing a widow's benefit and wait on your own record if you think that would be higher in the future. Now, keep in mind, when you start collecting Social Security, whether it's a survivor benefit or not, if you're pre-full retirement age, you will have those same earnings tests that I mentioned earlier. Okay, so be careful about claiming strategies if someone has passed away. I think I'm going to move on from talking about survivors' benefits because I want to make sure that I get everything else in that I wanted to talk about. Let's talk about divorced for a moment. Divorced people also have some options. If you're divorced, your ex-spouse can receive benefits based on your record, even if you've remarried, and it doesn't impact your benefit. So if your marriage lasted 10 years or longer, your ex-spouse is unmarried, your ex-spouse is age 62 or older, the benefit that your ex-spouse is entitled to receive based on their own work is less than the benefit they would receive based on your work, and you are entitled to Social Security, retirement, or disability benefits. So a divorced spouse can collect on an ex-spouse's record as long as you remained unmarried, it lasted longer than 10 years, and your ex-spouse is age 62 or older. So that is also something that I think falls off the radar for many people. How much will your divorced spouse receive if you've not applied for retirement benefits but can qualify for them? Your ex-spouse can receive benefits on your record if you've been divorced for at least 2 continuous years. If your ex-spouse is eligible for retirement benefits on their own record, we will pay that amount first. If the benefit on your record is higher, they will get an additional amount on your record so that the combination of benefits equals that higher amount. Okay, so keep in mind, there's lots of other nuances here. This is really for information, kind of alerting people what to watch for. People forget. This is one of the reasons I tell folks when you're getting divorced, keep your spouse's Social Security number handy, because Social Security is not going to share that information with you until you're ready to file for benefits. And if you need to kind of compare where the better benefit would be, they're going to need your ex-spouse's Social Security number. You will need that. Don't get mad and throw it away. Get mad and keep it. So let me talk about Medicare for a minute. There's different parts of Medicare. As you heard me mention earlier, on our pay stub, on our W-2, it's showing how much we're paying into the system for Medicare. That is going to cover our Part A hospital insurance. When you turn age 65 and you become Medicare eligible, you also become eligible for the Part A hospital insurance. Part B is something we pay for if we don't have other qualified health insurance through an employer or through a spouse who might have health insurance. Part B is premiums that we would pay for the doctor's visits and that type of thing. There's ABCs of Medicare. We've talked about this on a number of shows in the past. That would be available on a podcast under WDIY.org, under Public Affairs. So Part A, hospital. Part B is services from doctors and other healthcare providers. When you turn 65, you may still have qualified health insurance through an employer, but you could still get your card for Part A hospital insurance. What I typically suggest to people, if you are still working or still covered under a spouse's health insurance, for example, talk to HR, work with them. What does it make sense to do? Sometimes it would be cheaper for your spouse to go on Medicare Part B and use maybe the employer's insurance as a supplemental plan. You just have to be careful and make sure that you're considering all the options and the cost and all of that. There is health savings accounts as well, that if someone qualifies for Medicare and goes on Medicare at age 65, if you were a participant in a high deductible health plan through maybe your spouse or your own work and you decide to go on Medicare and prior you had a health savings account, you're no longer eligible for the health savings account. You have to be careful of that. I've had clients who have continued to work, continued to have the employer-provided health insurance weren't thinking, thought, oh, I'll get the Medicare Part A. As soon as they get the Medicare Part A, they're no longer eligible for the health savings account. So be careful of that. We had Jane from Easton who's called to ask the question off air. Does the higher amount ex-spouse need to be retired for the other spouse to collect on their amount? Very good question, Jane. The higher amount ex-spouse does not need to be retired for the other spouse to collect on their amount, I don't believe. If you are old enough to collect and you file for Social Security and you find out your ex-spouse's benefit is higher, they do not need to have filed, I guess is the better question. They do not need to have filed for Social Security. The thinking there is if it was really contentious divorce, one spouse might say, if that was the case that they had to be filing for Social Security, they might say, I'm never going to stop working. I'm never going to file for Social Security. And the system just isn't going to allow that to happen. So yes, a divorced spouse, if you're collecting on the higher earner, ex-spouse record, if you're eligible to file for Social Security, Social Security is going to look to see, is your benefit higher or is the ex-spouse's benefit higher? And if the ex-spouse's benefit is higher and you're eligible, you will qualify for that. So thank you for that question. Back to the Medicare. So we've talked about Medicare Part A, Medicare Part B. Be careful about high deductible health savings plans and health savings accounts. What I wanted to mention about Medicare in particular, when you get those notices about Social Security, if you are already age 65, those notices also include the cost of living adjustments I said that get mailed out in December. When you get those, if you are Medicare age and you're getting Medicare, those are also reflected on that benefit statement. It tells you what your Social Security benefit is. It will tell you what your Medicare charges, and it will tell you what withholdings you have on Social Security. When you get that, if your Medicare premium looks like it has been adjusted, the typical Medicare monthly premium, I'm just going to throw it off. I don't know it off the top of my head. It's about $142, $142.70, something like that. If that amount is much higher, it's because your income in the prior tax filing year must have been over certain thresholds. We call that the IRMA adjustment. The income-related monthly adjustment amount is your Medicare premium that goes up because your income was over certain thresholds. Off the top of my head, I know the married filing joint, I think for next year is going to be about $176,000. If your income was over, as a married filing joint couple, over $176,000 and single is about half that, if it was over that amount, they're going to adjust your Medicare premium. They're going to increase it. And there's lots of tiers that, you know, jump each tier, the increase in the premium jumps up. I know the prior year's numbers better than this year's numbers. It was 174 to 218 and then 218 to, I think, 272. So each tier, it jumps up a bit more until it's, for married filing joint, something like 700,000. Once you're over that amount, it's, you know, like practically $500 a month from the 142 that I've mentioned. If you get that notice and you see the Medicare premium is quite high and you say, but hey, folks, that's because I was working and I got that huge bonus that last year and now I'm retired and they're expecting me to pay this. I'm not making that kind of money anymore. There is a form you can file to ask for a adjustment on that, and it's called the SSA-44. That should be available on the website ssa.gov. You can also just Google for it. It's ssa.44. And you can explain to them that you had a life event and that you expect your taxable income to be lower in the current year or the next year. There's a couple different options there. A life event can be that you retired, you stopped working, you lost your job, your wages went down. What else? A married lost a spouse. There are a number of different life events that you can indicate on that form to get an adjustment on those Medicare premiums. The other thing that people don't realize is those income thresholds also include tax-exempt income. They look at that as well. You guys, the show went so fast, and there was just so much information, and I didn't get to do everything I wanted, but it was still fun, and we are on our upon our holiday season. I wish everyone to be safe, be well, have, you know, enjoy yourselves all by yourself, maybe for some people, because I know I have family members who will be all alone because they're trying to be safe. So please be safe. Do video chats and things like that. We wish you the happiest of holidays. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week. Happy holidays. Thank you, Shandi. Thank you, Lori. Thank you, listeners. I appreciate it.